Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Dynasty as They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host, Kyler K. Jafari.
Hi.
Well, how's it going? We're like week three of...
I don't know. There is no more sense of time. I have no idea.
I know. You keep saying that, and it always reminds me of Prince. You know, Prince famously, in his later years, stopped believing in the concept of time, which just meant he was like late for everything.
Yeah, or I thought that just meant that, you know, he was a divine being.
Yeah, like, that too.
For Prince, it was always eternity.
I love that. I love that for him, and I would love that for me too, but I think people would just think I'm an asshole.
No, I think we're trapped here waiting for whatever's going to happen. It's got to be better than whatever this is.
Well, I can tell you what's not going to be happening is we're not going to fucking talk about Tiger King. I'm so sick of everybody's obsession with this show. And I have not watched it, and I don't intend to watch it.
Was this just like a perfect storm of everybody's trapped at home, and this just happened to be on streaming at the right time?
I'd like to think so.
Or is it because people think tigers are cute, like, as a pet, but not in real life?
No, I think it's just the train wreck of it all, and people are trapped and they need something to latch on to. I don't know. It just seems very sad and depressing to me. And sorry, the world is like sad and depressing enough. I don't need to laugh at other people's bad judgment and misfortunes. And it's just so tacky, don't you think?
I mean, I guess, but I'm sort of gotten to a point where I'm embracing tackiness right now. I think we can't be too humble.
So you liked it the other day when we were doing a virtual happy hour with some friends and they were dressed as characters from Tiger King?
Yeah, I was fine with that. You know, as long as it doesn't turn into a game of Twister, you know, but...
I think they were offended when I thought that they were dressed in Burning Man costumes. I didn't get the reference, and they were just absolutely 100% sure that we'd seen every single second of Tiger King.
Well, they were very much all in on it, so I, you know...
I love a costume, yeah. So I...
Trophies for enthusiasm.
I appreciated that, but yeah. I did break down the other night, and I watched a clip on YouTube of RuPaul's Drag Race UK
Drag Race.
Me baby,
RuPaul Drag Race.
Me baby now in quarantine. Take care of me, my mom. No, the Vivian and Bag of Chips, these two drag queens, they were watching clips of Tiger King, so it was like you got the essence of everything in a, you know, 10 to 15 minute video.
On one hand, like, I could get like huffy about how there's so much consumption content. By that I mean like people like watching other things for you and then like talking about it, but that's basically what we do.
No, it's gonna say honey.
But also I think it's a really great way to watch TV or movies that you don't really want to watch, like, necessarily as that thing, you know. So it's kind of like you can kind of get it through somebody else's lens and and just consume it that way and sort of like let them do the Cliff's Notes for you.
Yeah. Oh, I'll give a recommendation because some of our viewers might like this. It's not really in the Dynasty realm, but there's this guy, James A. Janisse, who does a video series and a podcast, Dead Meat, where he counts how many people are killed in horror movies. But I mean, he's a straight white guy, but he's like kind of woke. So he sort of brings an interesting perspective to watching these like slasher movies from the 70s.
Yeah, but 80s. I think more than that, like he would even acknowledge, as pretty much anybody should, that all of those movies are just garbage in a fun way, of course. So it's like he's cutting out all of the fat, you know, and you just get like the best part. So it's like, and that's like the best way to watch a movie like that.
Oh, yeah, there's so
we don't need a, you know, 94 minute runtime of that, because there's a lot of shitty dialogue and like stale acting and poor production values.
Yeah, so there's like, so many of those movies that like I kind of want to watch, but then when I really think about it, it's like I don't want to give that 2 hours of my time. But I will watch, you know, a cute straight white guy talk about it for 10 minutes.
That says something about Dynasty, that we can sit here and kind of spit out a 35 or 42 minute podcast about a show that's 42 minutes long, because there's just something to say about everything that's going on. It's,
well, yeah,
it's high quality.
My
guys.
God, this, we spend 10 or 15 minutes of the podcast just talking about the outfits.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit of a superficial show, and so that's where you pay a lot of the attention.
Well, now we did break down the other night and watch a movie that is very fond in my heart. I don't think you've seen it in a long time, and that is the Jim Carrey, Lauren Hutton 80s vampire flick, Once Bitten.
Well, don't take all the credit. I was the one that remembered it, and then you were like, oh yeah, I used to love that movie. We got to watch it.
Okay.
Like, if I hadn't thought about it.
How it happened.
That's definitely how it happened.
No, I was like reminiscing about the 90s, and then I think like Exchange.
This movie
bars came
straight out of 1986, I believe, 87. So this is not the 90s.
Yes, but the aesthetic, the production values were very forward thinking. I mean, if you were to be dropped into Lauren Hutton's vampire Beverly Hills lair, would you think that you were in the 80s or the 90s?
Oh, this is like solid late 1980s. Are you kidding me?
I think it's like 91.
There is something about Los Angeles that defined the late 1980s feel. It's the pastels and the stucco and the vertical ginger jar lamps. And I think that that maybe trickled down to the rest of the country 5 years later, but it's very solidified in my mind as like that's the look of that.
Yeah,
time.
It kind of gives me Alexis Carrington penthouse vibes now.
A little
I think
bit
about it.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about Once Bitten is it ranks up there with great 80s dance routines, and I don't think it gets its due.
It really does. I was gonna say that would be like the highlight of it. Like, if you wanted to like sort of, you know, boil this movie down the way we were talking about. That's like the one scene you need to see is the dance off at prom. And obviously the shower scene is the other scene. This movie was kind of like really on sensitive subjects that I can't believe they were like allowed to
show boy butts
in like theatrical release. Yeah.
Yeah. And say the F word. The problem with that scene, though, is it's one of those gay terror.
Well, it's totally gay panic. Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of funny, but then when you think about it, you need to take a shower after you watch the shower.
It's a good example of like a movie that's like totally regressive and like, you know, in today's world, there's no excuse, but it's still entertaining as hell. And there's something about Lauren Hutton playing a vampirist that I just think is. It's such a giggle.
Yeah, she really sunk her teeth into that role.
Well, before we get into this week's episode, we're having a great cocktail that has always been in the repertoire. And this is a little bit in light of, you know, Alexis's campaigning in New York, specifically Manhattan. So we're having a Manhattan.
Have we drank Manhattans while recording the show before? I feel like we have.
We have not. I know. It feels like, how did we overlook this classic? I mean, this is like always in, you know, the rotation at the bar. But so, you know, it's kind of like making a martini. You want all the hardware, extremely cold, 2 ounces of bourbon or rye, your choice, and 1 ounce of high quality sweet red vermouth. We like a brand called Via. It's made in California, but there's some
Via.
Good things that come out of Italy, of course, because they invented the whole idea, I think. But and then instead of bitters, I use a dash of Fernet Branca, which is a perverse touch from,
I guess, medicinal.
San Francisco bartenders. Yeah, I don't know. They discovered or rediscovered this ingredient.
That's a pro tip. If you are needing your last drink of the night at the bar, you know, when bars are open again, order a glass of Fernet Branca. You won't have a hangover tomorrow.
Well, not a glass. Maybe just a shot. You don't want a whole glass of the stuff.
Well, yeah, just like serve.
I mean, meat. It tastes like road tar.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're going to enjoy it, but I'm going to say it's going to wipe the slate clean.
If you've got an upset stomach, I mean, that's what it was sort of invented for. It's all of these, like, you know, it's like bitter root and spices and herbs and things that will apparently cure your stomach ails. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, a little drop of that and this Manhattan, it's like probably one of our favorite drinks. And I don't normally drink them until the sun's gone down.
Well, cheers. All right. Well, let's take a break and get into this week's episode, Mark. Good day, this is Joseph Anders, Majordomo of the Carrington Mansion, reminding you to listen to Dynasty As They Wanna Be on Stitcher. Apparently, it's a free podcast app for Android and Apple. Apple, like the delicious fruit? It's home to over 260,000 podcasts. Stitcher also offers the Stitcher Premium subscription service featuring ad-free listening and exclusive bonus episodes for $4.99 a month or $34.99 a year. How ecumenical. If you want your first month of Stitcher Premium for free and to support Dynasty As They Want to Be, please make your way to stitcher.com/premium and sign up using promo code Dynasty. That's stitcher.com/premium, promo code DYNASTY. Jeanette, there are spots on the champagne flutes. How many times do I have to fucking tell you to buff them? Buff them. Welcome back. Well, it happened again. There's a new character revealed in the credits. Now, Mark Jennings popped up last week. His name has been uttered, good God, dozens of times, I think. But I didn't realize this actor, what's his name? Jeffrey Scott?
You know, I am remiss on my actor research for this episode.
I mean, he's
we're going to have to do a deeper dive on him. I don't like his characters. I think that's why I didn't really get into it with Jeffrey Scott. But yeah, he's got his own damn title card already.
Yeah.
So that means we're going to be stuck with this guy for a while.
It's going to be a Dr. Rigatone situation again because some outside male has been foisted upon us.
Well, it is kind of interesting how the Carringtons just always have this bevy of service professionals, you know, coming in and out of the doors. So I guess like Mark's just another one of these. Like he's a tennis pro, you know. Like,
well, he's got a pretty deep
connection.
This
is what the rich people think about the middle class or something. I don't understand really, but yeah, obviously he's got a connection to Crystal.
I think what had happened was Alexis coming in as the ex-wife of Blake Carrington really shook things up. So they're sort of like treading the same ground. By having Mark come back, it's like, oh, we had the ex-wife come back. We'll have the ex-husband, who's not really the ex-husband, apparently, come back. But it's not off to such a great start. Certainly not as great of a start as when Alexis was introduced in that courtroom scene.
Well, it's interesting you referenced the courtroom scene, but I'll get back to that in a second. Because, yeah, like, Alexis is, like, roosting at the Waldorf.
Oh, I thought that was the Plaza.
Oh, shit, you're right. That's the goddamn Plaza. Well, anyway... it's not any of those things anymore. It's, you know, been turned into a, I don't know, McDonald's. Yeah. So where is this East Island Tennis Club? What is this, like Montauk or something?
Yeah, I think
like,
it's the Hamptons.
It's like out in the slums of Long Island. And
I will say they spent about a buck and a dime on that sign.
On that one sign for that establishing shot. Otherwise, this is just another location in L.A. But yeah, so I love that she shows up at the tennis court and... this like over the top, you know, black and white day suit.
Still doing the black. She's still in mourning.
Hat. Still in mourning, but it's black and white, so it's half mourning. And also, it's sort of implying like chess moves because of the black and white. And also, she's just very down to facts. She's like, Mark, are you coming back to Colorado or not? I've got to get you in on this scheme with Crystal.
Wait, you're skipping over the part where he was completely misogynistic to one of his pupils by saying he was going to bend over and spank her little bottom. Like, this is a woman who is paying for your services. Maybe that's the service she wants. I don't know.
You know, that's a good point. But normally I would just default to the Dr. Tortellini issue, which is like, worst psychiatrist ever. Do you want this guy, you know, shrinking your head? No. Do you want this guy teaching you tennis? Probably not. But maybe these women like pay him for that service. They like being talked down to and demeaned.
Sweetheart, you're trying. I can really see how hard you're trying on your serve.
I really am, Mark. I swear. I always listen to you. I try to do everything you ask me to.
Sure you do. All this sparkling sweat tells me you do. But if you don't listen to me all the way, if you don't keep your eye on the ball at all times, I'm going to have to paddle your cute little bottom. Looks like we've run past the clock, so lesson's over and I'll see you Tuesday.
She's very pretty. And nubile. Is she any good?
With her racket, that is.
She has potential.
I bet.
I didn't do a lot of research on Jeffrey Scott or Mark because I wanted to give my opinions unencumbered at this point. Maybe next week I'll do a bit of a
And I like that we
dive.
Continue to do that because you can get too lost in the details sometimes.
But was he supposed to be like a hunk? Are they like giving this show some hot beef injection?
He's definitely poor man's Tom Selleck. At this time,
no, like, that's
he's
so
got
offensive.
The mustache and the blown out hair and the that little short
not,
shorts.
That does not a Tom Selleck make. Tom Selleck has charisma. He
that's why he's poor man's Tom Selleck.
Sex appeal. This guy has no sensibility.
He's barely fit to teach tennis in Montauk.
But do you find him sexy?
Not at all.
I mean, I probably wouldn't kick him out of bed, but like, I don't know.
Ooh, I might. And he doesn't even have to eat crackers.
Well, if he did, they'd all be stuck in his mustache. Yeah, I'm unclear of what purpose he's serving other than to kind of flesh out Crystal's character and her backstory. But do we need a whole separate character to do that?
No, and here's the problem with this character, and I think this is a good place to sort of introduce the whole problem with this episode. And I like this episode a lot. It's still delivering everything that we've been loving so far this season. However, this episode's really trying hard to the point that we're just introducing random plot points and characters all of a sudden that have nothing to do with anything and came from nowhere. And he's a really good example of like, does this guy really need to be here except that he's going to advance the story? But when characters are just there to advance the story,
I wouldn't mind him as a guest star, but he's in the opening fucking credits now.
I mean, I'm really getting PTSD about the James Farentino character.
Same.
Because like, I don't want to sit with this guy for, and it's nothing against Jeffrey Scott. I mean, I don't like the actor's not the problem. It's the character. I don't care about this tennis pro. I don't like the fact that it's like Crystal's ex from way back or not, as it may be. There's just something problematic about this whole plot device that's not entertaining to me.
Well, the only thing I do like about it is that it gives Alexis another sort of
well, that's really all it's there for, so she can make some more chess moves in her, you know, evil game of
What I was gonna say before you cut me off was I like the fact that she has to play into his emotions, which is not necessarily something that she normally has to do. She sees that he really does still love Crystal. And that this isn't about money for him. This isn't about fame or power or like pedigree.
Well, again, going back to this thing with her black and white dress, she's used to dealing in facts and strategy and like mind games. And like this, yeah, this is very much a game of heart. And she's the queen of spades.
The other thing that's slightly interesting about it is that she spends this time in New York trying to convince him to come back to Denver. And he's very staunchly against it. And then he just shows up anyway and does this weird ass tennis trick shot routine to impress Fallon to get a job at the hotel now known as La Mirage.
Well, I do think the writers played a little bit of shell game with this plot point because you don't really understand. I mean, I guess, okay, so this is the other thing that's really problematic about this episode, and I just mean aesthetically. This is the ultimate bad taste episode. Like, between Joseph's daughter, who we've never heard of and, like, really has no consequence to anything right now being
introduced.
Well,
I have questions about that.
Mark, who, again, just needs to be here so that Alexis can pull some strings in her revenge games. And then, like, you've got, like, this bad flashback stuff going on with, like, Mark and Crystal.
My jaw dropped. We basically saw Crystal lose her virginity on her wedding night.
Oof, do you really think it was that bad?
Well, that's what she said. He's like, I'm going to be gentle. And she's like, I know you will.
Oh, my God. Here's the thing. There was so much, like, dream soft focus and like introducing new soundtrack music. It's like the Lawrence Welk champagne music.
There was a whole jar of Vaseline on the lens.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe even some pantyhose over the lens too. And so I didn't even hear any of the dialogue. It was just sort of like shocking.
I was mortified. One thing I never thought we would see, and that I know that I did not need to see, was Crystal Carrington Nee Jennings lose her V card on screen. Luckily,
I kind of blacked out at a certain point in this flashback, which that's blacking out in the flashback. But did they do it through a hole in the sheet? Like, what was this like sexcapade like?
It involved candy dishes, apparently.
That's all I heard was like the $200 in wedding gifts, like, which was a big
$200 of candy dishes,
because we're talking Big Valley Linda Evans, not Dynasty Linda Evans. So, you know, this is a like the contrast of like how simple it was. Like, oh God, we got $200 worth of candy dishes
for
our wedding.
This is what this is doing for Crystal, because we know a lot about the Carringtons at this point in this series. We don't know too much about Crystal's backstory, and she is one of the pillars of the show.
I don't really know what Mark is, and that's the problem. He's kind of tofu. He just sort of takes on the flavor of the characters around him.
Which is appropriate, because he always wears white.
Well, yes, there you go. And maybe this is a comment on tennis in the 80s, too. I have no idea, but...
Well, don't you talk trash about tennis now. You know it's one of my fave sports.
Hot rackets.
Oh, I need to go into hot rackets. That should be a...
Oh my God.
We're going to do a bonus episode on our Patreon, patreon.com/nastypodcast, and I'm going to tell you guys about hot rackets.
He's going to tell you all about the hot rackets.
Let me just tell you, porn plus tennis equals hot rackets. I'm not going
to
say anymore.
Right, but you have to place it in time.
In the 80s.
Okay.
Or maybe the 70s.
Because like, if you do that now, it's just like on Pornhub, so who cares?
Well, let's shift to talking about what most of this episode I feel like deals with, and that's the relationship of Adam, Blake, and Fallon. Adam has quickly established himself at the top of the food chain of Colby Co., and apparently he's still not too happy with Blake. I mean, he's taking his calls, and he's willing to go to lunch with him at now La Mirage, of course, because this is the new St. Denis Club. That's the only place you can go to and have lunch in town.
Right. I think the St. Denis Club must have been like dismantled, and it became a prop on The Price is Right or something at this time. This is totally apocryphal. I'm just making that up. But it's weird because like Blake is almost in some ways like trying to romance Adam. So he pulls up in this like hot red Ferrari and he's like, oh, you want to drive this baby? And then like he has sort of like a little mini falling out at the table with Adam.
Over nothing.
And like it's funny that they're literally talking politics at the table, which is inconsequential, but it's interesting. And Fallon is like, you know, she shows up. So Blake is like sort of pleading for Adam in front of Fallon. Like, but this is like the whole thing is like kind of like awkward. And it's like, what is this like rich family incest stuff again?
It kind of comes out
because
of
then like Adam even says like sexy little sister.
You know, I might have taken my sexy little sister here for a lot of things when I first met her, but a hotel tycoon, never.
Do you really think I'm sexy, Adam?
Very.
Well, that's very flattering from my brother of all people.
Oh, if I'm anything, Fallon, I'm an honest brother.
It's like the Donald Ivanka thing or something. I don't know. There's like so much weird rich people.
No, that's a good parallel. I thought we were going to be done with the incest stuff, but no, there's like this incest hangover because Adam...
I don't need no cure for this incest hangover.
Yeah, it's weird because Adam reveals to Jeff, who I guess now they're enemies, that, you know, they had a little fling and that Fallon was coming on to him, which is total fucking hogwash. They were equally into each other. And Adam is still calling her sexy. It's like, ugh, we gotta move on from this.
I mean, I still have to ask, is this like acceptable parlance in the 80s, like for siblings to speak to each other in these terms of more than just endearment? I just think it's inappropriate.
I don't know. The whole thing makes me happy that I'm an only child because it is grody to the max. Later on, we do kind of sort of understand why Blake is wooing Adam, and that's because he feels
bad
about...
Blake wants a straight son. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
I love that, like, I don't remember who said it, Blake or Adam, but or somebody else for that matter. Steven's been gone, and we don't know where he went, and we've almost forgotten him, and I feel like that's almost meta because the audience is probably like, where did this character go?
I'm wondering if there were a lot of newer viewers because the ratings had spiked so high at this point in the run that they were like, wait a minute, there's another one?
And right, and they're probably thinking like Adam's the actual original brother and then Steven's just sort of this like thing that they talk about. I don't know. It's
he's
weird.
He's this specter looming over the Carrington Mansion.
Well, they're still casting for Steven. So we have to talk about the renaming of...
Well, I didn't know if I had been calling it La Mirage or if I had been calling it La Mirada. In my head, I never made a distinction between the two.
They sort of mean similar things and, of course, sound similar. And they all come from Latin words. So it's just like sort of interchangeable in a sense. But yeah, I think because I remember it as La Mirage because that's what it is at this point forward.
Right.
I probably called it that back in the day. And
well, I love the new sign.
Confused you.
I'm obsessed with the new logo. I need...
Oh, the new sign is so now.
I need a t-shirt or a polo or something with that logo. I'm going to be going on Etsy and seeing if anybody has conjured that up. If not, we should make that available on nastypodcast.com.
I mean, the La Mirage sign reminds me of all the like subdivisions I like grew up in and my friends lived in. Back then, like they would always have like the brick planter with that kind of a sign on
yeah,
it.
And a big
for the name
bold
of the neighborhood, you know.
Sans serif font.
Right. Yeah. Always sans serif.
Yeah. Get those serifs out of here.
And don't you dare get behind on your HOA payments. Yeah. So La Mirada means the gaze, and La Mirage means the illusion. So take from that what you will.
Oh, mic drop.
I don't. Yeah, I just, it's interesting that one sort of suggests the other, but La Mirage kind of dials it in even more. And I just again, this ties back to why I love La Mirada, La Mirage, whatever the hell this purgatory is.
Well, it's definitely a fucking mirage because the renovation is still going on. They have the sign now. They've taken down some of the tarps. I mean, I did notice that there was a pillar that was saran wrapped.
Yeah, I love the saran wrapped furniture and dust cloths, and that equals pardon our renovation. Like, but okay.
No. It's not pardon our renovation. The sign was literally like a paragraph long. It's like, why couldn't you just say, excuse our dust? Did you see that sign? That was...
Yeah, that was like from a skills exchange conference or something. Like, where did that... like whole poster board full of words come from?
Yeah,
on an easel. I don't think anybody took the time to stop and read that.
I was gonna freeze frame it, but I was like, ugh, the last thing I need to do is read another book right now.
I need to schedule a call with Fallon because we need to go over some things about this place.
We also need to go over some things with her outfits. So,
oh my God.
Spoiler alert.
Should we save this for fashion talk or right
no,
now?
No, she's not going to be winning the look of the
week
at all.
She has fully embraced the prairie governess look. I mean,
it's terrible.
She was sort of doing Stevie Nicks, you know, at croquet in the prior couple of episodes. Now she's like migrated to Christine McVie. And it's just like lots of bad lace fichu shawl things with puff sleeves, and it's very much a look. I mean, I will give it that. Like, she's doing this young look that was happening at that moment, but like, it's not what we think of when we think of 80s fashion.
I just have to think that they weren't sure what to do because she's trying to be a businesswoman. She's a mother, so maybe they don't want her in the tight clothes and the jumpsuits, you know.
Well, I think this feeds very much into how the 80s was a very adult time. And I don't mean like adult in the like the fun, sexy way. I mean like, there were people of a certain age with money and power, and that's what Dynasty is really giving you. And she's very much more like the young, you know, sort of like coming up like side of that. So that's why I think she's in these sort of like bad frontier outfits.
I don't know. If it keeps going this way, I'm going to understand why Pamela Sue Martin left the series, because if they made me wear those clothes, I'd quit too. I did think it was really cute that we got a little heart-to-heart between Crystal and Jeff, who I don't know. They really don't have a relationship together, but
I mean,
it was
we were kind
of nice.
On this in the moment, like when there's the nursery scene with them.
Oh, yeah. When it was just Crystal, little Blake, and Jeff, I was like, shut the door.
Throw away the key. Like, I want these annoying characters to be trapped in the attic forever and never come back to the show.
I know. But we kid. I did like that they had a little moment together, because these are probably like the purest characters or the non-bitches.
I know, but it also means they're the most boring characters. And all they just do is like speak in fluffy half-truths, and that's of course how we get to Jeff talking about his sham marriage with Fallon, and oh, but like, how could I ever fall out of love with her? I don't like her or anything else, but how can I ever fall out of love?
I have no sympathy. He wanted this all along. He pushed this along. Fallon has resisted everything along the way, so I can't get on board with what
he's
saying.
Just keeping it together for the baby, let's just be honest. And but this just spurs Crystal to link back to, oh, I had a first love and I'm still not out of love with him, and his name was Mark. I mean, she doesn't go into all of that story, but they're cross-cutting it with the bad flashbacks from Mark. So it's very clear they're trying to like line up this whole Mark and Crystal reigniting storyline.
Yeah, which was nice.
I don't know if that's the word I would use to describe it, but I would call it cheap.
Now we have to talk about Joseph the bitchy butler, a.k.a. the malicious majordomo, and now father? I thought he was gay. Not that you can't be gay.
Stop that.
Is this a biological daughter?
I don't, you know, it doesn't matter, because none of these characters are biological. They're clearly
written in a room.
Studio City. That's how, like, how much the seams are showing here. That, like, where does this, like, we needed to make Joseph relevant again. So let's write this bad backstory about he has a daughter at the Sorbonne.
Well, her fiance is at the Sorbonne. Joseph, I'm usually okay with, but now that they're dipping into his backstory, he's just as misogynistic as all these other
is a testament to how two-dimensional characters can actually be really well written, and what happens when you try to make them three-dimensional, and then suddenly Joseph is sort of like deballed. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't really want to hear about his daughter and him having like this whole family backstory. Like, that's not what Joseph is. Like, he's sort of an accessory to the Carringtons.
Right, you know? A bitchy, fun accessory, totally. And it makes him seem shallow that he was trying to marry his daughter off to some rich Parisian guy. Now he's going to go to Paris and make sure she marries that man. Now, like, I mean, I wasn't like the hugest fan of Joseph, but I thought he brought some levity and fun and was good at, you know, delivering exposition and basically voicemails to the characters.
Yeah, and I think the show's kind of getting away with all of this bullshit right now, because everything else is so good, and they're just kind of like glossing over everything with a very shiny varnish. But
we've lost Claudia. We've lost a lot.
Yeah, right
we've
now we're wondering, Claudia. Where the hell is Steven?
We've lost Steven.
Claudia, my favorite character, is gone.
The weird psychologist,
neurologist. I did not need this thing with Joseph. Mark is just like, where the hell? I mean, I guess he's Crystal's sometime husband. It's just, there's a lot of like stuff being forced into this episode, or really into the show in this episode, that I'm not comfortable with, but everything else is like so good.
Well, they earned a lot of goodwill with Adam, I think, because it was dramatic and fun, and Gordon Thompson has sort of turned out to add an interesting dynamic to everything, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Kirby, whatever her last name is, hasn't even appeared yet. There's just talk of her. So I appreciate the fact that they're at least like setting it up, and it's not like boom, bang, she's here and she's, you know, fucking somebody.
Whoa, that went 0 to 60 very quickly.
Well, I appreciate that it didn't go 0 to 60 on the show.
So I guess we're forced to talk a little bit of shop here, because I guess Colby Co. and Denver Carrington have some inner family conflicts going on.
Yeah, a lot of moves happening, a lot of career opportunities.
Yeah, it's okay. So, you know, we've always complained about Jeff being sort of like, I don't know, no cojones, especially after season one. He's a strong character, and then he's not anymore. Now he's, I guess, trying to play some moves against Adam. I feel like there's just like some sheer vengeance going on here between these two.
It's Adam Carrington. I think that's all been squared away. My mother believes me, no questions asked. Blake apparently believes me, questions asked and answered. And you know what else I think, Jeff? Sitting here now, face to face with you. I'm thinking how strange it is you can't control your temper in a simple business matter. But maybe then again, it's not so strange after all, is it? I mean, a man who can't control his own wife, her sexual appetite.
Seems like his only motivation is really that Adam fired the lawyer for Colby Co. because the lawyer for Colby Co. told Jeff about a deal happening with those damn Rashid Ahmed brothers.
And Adam, like a classic sociopath, already showed his hand the first time he ever met Jeff, like, oh, show me them oil lease documents. You know, we both work for the same family. It doesn't matter that it's two different companies. So I think Jeff already was clued in on, you know, what a psycho this guy was. And I think now that that and some other things have built up and Jeff's just in rage mode, which he already was at the beginning of this episode where he's sprinting in his Mercedes across what's supposed to be downtown Denver, but is clearly Century City.
It is a weird place to be in for Jeff, where he's working for Denver Carrington. He's kind of at the top. Blake Carrington is this father figure, but now he owns 50% of this other company, which is owned 50% by Denver Carrington. I don't know how all that business stuff works, but it's definitely
You're not supposed to think odd. Too hard about any of that.
I'm not going to.
And that's why I really hate when they try to introduce business in this show. I think this is probably handled a little better than it was earlier, but it's still just like, does anybody care that much about the oil business side of the plot here?
I just like the fact that they're setting up this kind of rivalry between Adam, who is a bloodline Carrington and now mixed up with Colby Co., and Jeff, who wants to be a Carrington but is actually a Colby. It's sort of an interesting dynamic. I think there's a lot that
but
they
they're both
do with
equally
it.
Somewhat illegitimate, right? Because Adam is portrayed somewhat as a pretender, even though he probably is blood, so nobody's really sure, is he, isn't he? And obviously Jeff is, you know, in a similar
Why
position.
Why hasn't any blood work been done?
Well, there was blood work. Remember when Cecil and Blake had to do the...
That was to determine if Cecil was Fallon's father.
Well, I know, but that's all the blood work you're going to get on this show.
Okay, well,
After this, it's just pure conjecture and tarot cards and, you know, woo-woo.
You mean baby rattles.
Sure, that too.
Anyway, all right. Well, this was a really interesting episode. I think they're setting up a lot of stuff. Alexis had some fun lines and the fashions were good. Let's talk about the fashions.
I should say, though, the thing with Alexis at the end especially, but it's kind of laid out a little bit earlier, is she is asserting her power in that dynamic with Adam and Jeff. I think Adam's a little bit, I hate this dumb word, but he is a little bit thirsty and like a good psychotic. He's really just trying to take over the world and she has to kind of put him in his place. So it's kind of interesting that she's very comfortable with Jeff kind of just like coming aboard, even though she probably knows in the back of her mind not to trust him either. And then they have that weird little like dinner conversation where she tells Adam as much. You know, like, I know who my enemies are and I will make those choices and you're not anybody to tell me.
Yeah, she's not afraid to put anybody in her place. But I do think that Jeff has done the miraculous job of winning over everybody in this show except his wife and baby mama.
Well, it's funny because Adam even calls Jeff out for his smooth skin. And he's like, I guess that's supposed to imply like that he's a homosexual.
No. I think it's supposed to imply that.
Well, because Blake even says, no, Jeff's definitely a man or whatever, which
oh,
I guess
that
means,
was like gay talk?
Which means you're not a homosexual. You know, it's like, I mean, so yeah. It's,
I didn't even realize that.
Yes.
That makes sense.
This is damning dialogue.
Because Adam knows that Jeff and Fallon ain't fucking. So now he's thinking, oh, well, maybe he's one
well,
of those.
Well, this is more of like the kinky family dynamic. I don't know who's into who, who's wanting who. I, you know, the way that people talk about each other in this family.
Ugh, gross.
I mean, I guess that's why it's called Dynasty.
You mean Dynasty. Now it's time for the part of the episode where Kyler and I choose our lurk of the week. I know that I'm getting bored of Alexis wearing black, but I do like that, as you sort of noted earlier, she's introducing other elements, the white in the tennis. And then at the end, she's got those big, what is that? Jasmine roses, that print on the black dress.
I don't know what it was, some sort of oversized floral print on black. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of a kimono cut.
But there was just something about her wearing that black and white outfit when she strutted into that tennis court in Montauk or the Hamptons or wherever it was. And all the focus, all the energy, she just sucked it up. And those sunglasses, I want those sunglasses for sure.
Yeah, the windshield sunglasses. And also, she's at a tennis court, which totally contrasts and makes this outfit stand out even more.
Oh, honey, she's come in from the city just to come have this conversation, and she's going to go right back. She's not going to the damn beach.
Well, and also, she's campaigning for Mark, who's in his little white short shorts. And so there's also a power dynamic there, too. You know, what she's wearing does all of these things.
Don't you think I'd look good in those sunglasses, though? I gotta find a pair of sunglasses like that. I mean,
the oversized sunglasses are in. Also, I think that the suit, dress, hat, whatever, I know, all of these things.
Is this your look of the week, too?
I'm not really sure, but I would say that it reiterates her original entrance to the show in the courtroom.
Yeah,
but finally gives it its proper due. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's still a black and white. It's not illusion, but it's doing something else that black and white are capable of, and it's just more refined. So it's like she's finally getting the proper treatment.
And there's no GD veil. I was so sick of all those veils that she was wearing.
I mean, were veils just like a fad for like a couple of years in the early to mid 80s?
I don't remember my mama wearing a veil when I was a little babe in the 80s.
I don't think your mama was like roosting at the Plaza in 1984, shopping at Bergdorf. I really did love some of the accessories we got this time, most especially the peacock brooch that she's wearing on her morning toga at the hotel room.
Was she wearing like some sort of an owl brooch too?
It wasn't an owl. It was like a peacock. If you look at it, there's like some like fan feather thing, but it's all
I thought it was an owl.
It's rhinestones, diamante. It might be real diamonds. Who the hell? It probably is if it's Alexis, but it's also got like a pivot, so it kind of like moves with her, you know, so it's not just like a stationary jewelry piece, you know. So like that was like fun. I kind of liked the one shoulder toga, even though it's not exactly really on point with what we usually like in the outfits on this show. And then
the headband at the end.
The headband at the end for sure. You know, there's just a lot of like details. Oh, probably my favorite accessory actually is her Jigunda crystal table lighter in her penthouse apartment. I mean, if you're going to smoke inside, you might as well have goddamn accessories to do it. You know, like,
well, and that's probably a workout to lift that thing up to your cigarette.
I mean, you want an ashtray from Cartier. You want a table lighter from Tiffany. You want cigarettes from Italy. You know, who knows? But yeah.
And
she only took two puffs
of that cigarette before she put it
out. It's really all just for the drama. I mean, even she doesn't really want to drag either. She's just, you know, again, a cigarette for her is another power move. She's just going to light her cigarette because it's kind of an FU to whoever's in the room talking to her. You know?
Well, it's the end of the world, baby, so smoke them if you got them. Well, Kyler, thank you for joining me for another episode of Dynasty as They Want to Be.
Well, I don't have any choice. We're stuck here.
You love it. And if you love us, you should follow us on social media. We're at Nasty Podcast. That's NASTY Podcast. If you're new listening, Dynasty is like a sports term. So we're just nasty.
Because we're nasty as we want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And if you really love us, you can support us on Patreon. We have all kinds of goodies on there, including ad-free episodes and bonus episodes. You can join at the Crystal, Alexis, or Blake levels. But even if you don't want to do that, we'll still be delivering you Dynasty as They Want to Be every week, wherever fine podcasts are available. If you want more information or want to write us a little note, you can visit nastypodcast.com. Oh, and Kyler, we had a really nice little Instagram message from one of our fans, Evan Tyler McFalls.
What sort of bullshittery are we getting called out for this time?
He called Nasty Podcast his newest discovery, open parentheses, which I love, close parentheses. And this is a sexy guy. So we love you too, Evan. Tyler McFalls. Next week, I guess we're going to meet Kirby, whatever her fucking last name is.
Oh, boy.
Just what we needed.
Burn all my love letters. Tell the children I'm never coming back.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.